A Firebase sometime. You know the difference between a Firebase and an LZ.
Could you explain it?
Okay, an LZ is just a landing zone. Mm-hmm. It's something that is usually carved out. I got another story about that one later, but it's usually carved out of the jungle by the use of Agent Orange and other defoliants. And it's just a place where you can set down a chopper or 10 and resupply and get the hay out of there.
Right.
They don't stay. A fire base is a larger, maybe could even land airplanes and things like this. So they usually were larger areas, right? Khon Loi was a fire base because they had an airstrip that would land C-130s and C-29s and stuff like that. But anyhow, I was on a fire base one time, and the Arvins were the perimeter defense, and I never felt comfortable on that LZ or that fire base. I was always uncomfortable. These guys are fuck offs, man. They'd be laying around, you know, supposed to be on what we call Green Line. That was Green Line. Perimeter is called Green Line. They'd be on Green Line guard, and they're sitting out there with their feet up, you know, yakking and laughing and shit. We always thought that they were and knew the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And not that they would turn around and fire on us, but they certainly were not going to give their lives as we were.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we were giving our lives so that we didn't lose our own. I mean, we were willing to fight so that we didn't lose our own life.
Yeah.
These guys, they just kind of said, oh, well, and stepped aside. So you couldn't, I know it's a general comment, but no matter what vet you would talk to, he would have the same impression as I did. You don't trust these guys, man. You just do not trust them.
Well, and that must have been a sap on morale as well, knowing that about your allies.
Well, knowing allies that about these are the people marks. These are the people that my buddy just died for.
Yeah,
because they're going to continue to live here. We're not. We're going home in a year, or whatever. And so, yeah, that was. I mean, you know, you, amongst yourselves, you're talking like, you know, fuck that guy, man. He's an asshole. You know, he's going to let me die for him, and this is his country. So. There was a lot of animosity. A lot of animosity. I mean, I know a situation personally where Kit Carson Scout is an NVA soldier or a Viet Cong who has defected and become part of our unit and who will lead us to different pathways to installations or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I got shaved by Kit Carson Scouts sitting underneath their tent. I would go over there and they would shave me and I would give them money to shave me and we'd talk and drink beer together and, you know, I felt more comfortable with a defector than I did with an Arvin soldier. And I would never share it with an Arvin soldier. There was no way I would go and sit in his hooch and talk and bullshit and laugh. But with the Kit Carsons, shit, I'd be over there every day with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why that was. I knew that I didn't like these guys. It wasn't that I liked or disliked these guys. I just felt comfortable with them.
To sort of slightly change subject.
Yeah.
A lot of military theorists now have criticized the idea of a one-year tour of duty and the constant cycle of troops in and out as sort of sapping the camaraderie. That, say, is very prevalent in the Second World War and Korea vets. Did you find that, the constant stream of people coming in and out, was a drain on the cohesion of the
unit? Yeah, I did. I did feel like that. And, you know, it was a well-known fact that in Vietnam, we were told in our briefing that the reason they were doing this is so that we didn't come too attached to you as my buddy and then you died and then I freaked out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you die because I only known you for 10 days anyhow, so who gives a shit, was their attitude. That you wouldn't be in love with this guy for long enough to miss him if he died.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality of life is that you fell in love with these guys anyhow. Didn't matter how long you were with them. You were with them for one day. They were your brother. They were somebody you were in love with. They were somebody that you counted on to help you, and you were going to help him in any situation. That's just human. So now you fall in love with this guy, and then he's going home in 3 days. And you're like, oh, shit. You know, you're going home, and I'm not. So there was all these other emotional and jealousies and things like this that would crop up amongst the... So did it destroy the camaraderie? Hell yes, it destroyed the camaraderie, because it segmented everything. It segmented everything. Every part of your daily cycle was segmented. You know, you have a guy come walking around, and I was one of them, because you play the game. You know, every day on your helmet, you'd put a new number of how many days you had left. You weren't allowed to do that until you had less than 60 days, but then you were king of the hill. And you had less than 30 days, then everybody put you in a hooch by yourself, and you were not allowed. You were not allowed to come out and fraternize with the other people because you were a danger.
Well, I imagine, too, that when you're down to your last 60 days, you're not going to be taking many risks.
Well, and that's why you were segmented, because people felt that, you know, your own people felt that they couldn't count on you like they could when you had 90 days left. Mm-hmm. When you only had 60 days left, you were buried. You got your head down as low as you could possibly get it. So you were kind of like non-existent. Whereas if you had 120 days left, you were up there shooting.
Yeah, of course.
You were in it. So there was a, you know, fallacy as it is, if you didn't get hit in the first 30 days, you were going to get hit in the last 30 days. So the first 30 days, everybody stayed away from you, and the last 30 days, everybody stayed away from you.
You mentioned earlier that there was huge tensions between the white and the black troops. Do you find that continue on once the shells started falling, or when you're in combat?
No.
Yeah.
No. That was what was so weird about it too, is that you didn't hang out together, but you fought together well. You know, and I got an enormous amount of respect for the troops, because these guys were 19 years old. The average age was 22 years old in Vietnam, the average soldier, the age. And for being that young and that inexperienced and that far away from the reality of war, to come together and have the tenacity that we did have, all those things were dropped. Mm-hmm. All those things were dropped. It's just when you were socializing, when we had a moment to be apart, it separated really quickly. Now, that may not be true in the infantry, because you're out in the field and you're sharing foxholes together. But in the rear or in an artillery area where you have the opportunity to have different hooches, that was very real. And I don't think it was done, it was done as a course of events. It wasn't done like, fuck you, I'm out of here now, I'm going over to with my black buddies. But there was a lot of tension at that time. Military radio, armed forces radio. They either had cowboy music or they had soul music. No psychedelic music. There wasn't guys like me that could enjoy the Doors or enjoy, you know, all these other groups that we kind of were involved in. No, none of that stuff. Cowboy or soul music. So guys like me were pissed off about that, you know. I love soul music, brought up on Motown, but it didn't identify me.
Of course.
And cowboy music certainly didn't identify me. So I was pissed that I didn't have an identity. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't the only one. That separated us right away.
Do you find, what would be people's reactions when you'd meet them out in the field and they'd find out that you were a Canadian? Would they be surprised?
What the hell are you doing here?
Yeah, go figure.
That was basically their reaction. What the hell are you doing? Are you crazy, man? You know, you could be living in Canada up in the Great White North, you know, on and on. You know, what the hell are you doing here? Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like, there was no way for people to know that. The Army's very good at dressing everybody the same. You don't know who's who, you know? And it functions very well like that because there's the judgments are, you know, skin color only. But when they did find out, of course, there was a lot of questions. And I tried to answer them the same way I'm answering them today. I mean, what can I say? This is a path that I kind of just went with, you know? I don't necessarily believe this is my fate. I don't necessarily believe that, you know, I was just following the rule of whatever. I just kind of figured, hey, man, this is what's going on in my life, and I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, segment at a time.
Fair enough. So you mentioned in our correspondence before the interview to make sure I asked you a question about the Michelin rubber plantations.
Right.
Could you... Oh.
Sorry.
No worries.